Spirit Blade Underground, episode
439.
Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode
439.
Christmas and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. Peter Franson here from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. In fact, do that sooner rather than later if it's still December 18th or earlier, because our big sale is still going on, but it ends at the end of the day, December 18th. I just wanted to put that in there. I'll mention it again a little bit later. On the show today, a review of Rogue One, a Star Wars story. I think that's the subtitle, right? I can't remember, but it's Rogue One. Anyway, also some Greek? No, we don't have any of those. Some geek Chris, not because I'm like racist against Greeks, we just don't have any. Some geek Christmas memories from our community and how the birth of Jesus can actually rescue geeks from Christmas. All right, here we go.
Displacement engines are charged for warp, Captain Franson.
Great, computer. Set a course for the uncharted territories.
By your command. And might I compliment your choice of clothing today?
Oh, thanks. Almost went with the blue shirt, but felt like red at the last minute.
Warning, enemy ships approaching.
Divert power to shields.
Defensive systems malfunctioning.
Oh, what?
Overdue
what?
For annual maintenance.
Oh, come on.
Incoming weapons fire.
Evasive maneuvers. Arm the photon torpedo.
Wormhole detected.
What? Wormhole? Where the frez did that come from?
Critical gravitational damage.
No.
Supernova detected within lethal range.
We've got
projected chance of lethality 100%.
What the crap is going on? All right, well, my editing skills are crap, but can the same thing be said about Rogue One, a Star Wars story? Stick around and find out. All right, let's get into it. First off, I'm Peter Franson from ChristianGeekCentral.com and Spirit Blade Productions. This is my uncut review of Rogue One, a Star Wars story. The synopsis on IMDb reads, "The Rebellion makes a risky move to steal the plans for the Death Star, setting up the epic saga to follow." Yep, a whole lot of setup in this movie, and a whole lot of dependency on being familiar with Star Wars and loving Star Wars. Apart from that basic synopsis there, you know, there's a little girl who her dad works on the Death Star. She gets older, ends up joining the effort to find its weaknesses and deliver that information to the rebels so that Luke, you know, can... I mean, Luke isn't in this movie, but, you know, so that, as we know, in episode 4, Luke can know where to shoot his lasers. Let me tell you where I'm at and why not to listen to me, maybe. I'm basically just here to take part in this conversation. You know, it's a big event for a Star Wars movie to come out. I am assuming that no one is going to watch this video to help them decide whether or not to see this movie. I think people are either going to not care about Star Wars and they're just like, oh, okay, if my friends are going, I'll go, you know, or not. Or they care about Star Wars and they're like, yes, I want to see a new Star Wars movie. So I think that's the deciding factor. So I'm just here to... Basically, I don't want to poop on anybody's parade. Obviously, as you can tell from my tone, I did not enjoy this movie. I'm just here to be a part of the conversation, maybe offer some thoughts that you'll hopefully find interesting. I'm not trying to persuade you or anything like that. You will very likely disagree with me, and that's fine. I don't think anyone is stupid or deficient in any way for liking this movie, and I think it's great if you enjoyed it. I'll just try to tell you where I'm coming from so you know why I didn't. So first off, regarding like the story... And the script, the pacing. The tone is pretty serious with some humor. I tend to like things that are more serious in my fiction. There's nothing cute like Ewoks or Gungans, you know, cute. and I really love this more consistently serious tone of the recent Star Wars movies, starting with Force Awakens and then continuing with this one. And so I hope that that continues. My wife, as we were driving away and I asked her thoughts, I was very careful. I was like, I want to hear your thoughts. And I gave her just a deadpan, hey, I want to hear your thoughts on this movie. What did you think of this? Before injecting any of my own, I did not want to influence her thoughts in any way. And I was surprised at how much we agreed and also some of the differences we had. One thing she said that we both agreed on was, you better be a Star Wars fan if you're going to see this movie. Now, the reason she said it is different from me. She said it for plot reasons. Like, it felt like for her, she was kind of thrown into this world and this story, and she hadn't seen, you know, the episode 4 in a long time, you know, and so she didn't remember all the nitty-gritty of, like, the rebellion and, like, the fact that at the end of episode 4 they found these plans and they used them to destroy the Death Star. Spoilers! She remembered that they destroyed the Death Star at the end, but she just really didn't remember all the rebellion stuff, you know, and so she felt like coming in the middle of a story, and she said it very much felt like a book series, you know, or as I told her, Lucas intended this kind of serialized kind of storytelling. It'd probably be good to rewatch or be familiar with episode 4 before you see this movie. At the same time, you're probably going to want to watch that movie if you're a Star Wars fan right after watching this one, because it leads directly into the opening moments of that one. Anyway, the script, it depends on you remembering the basic story of episode 4 and, again, specifically the rebel side of that story. It also plays to and depends on nostalgia, I think, a lot. And my wife felt the same way. In fact, that was something she shared first before I mentioned it, that really, you know, I'm lying right there. She just agreed with me. It was borne out in some of her comments because we saw like the costuming and stuff. I'll get to like the visuals. Let me circle back to that. But she definitely felt like her nostalgia aided her enjoyment of this movie. And I'll get to specifics on that in a minute when I talk about the visual look of the movie. I love sci-fi and fantasy, but Star Wars holds no special place in my heart. So it was cool when I first saw it as a kid and growing up with it, because it was unlike anything I'd seen. But now it has inspired so much creativity in the worlds of sci-fi and fantasy and in those genres and their appearances in TV and movies and stuff that really I can find that kind of crazy mashup of genres and trapping sci-fi mixed with fantasy. I can find that elsewhere and done more to my liking, so I don't need Star Wars for that anymore. And the classic Star Wars movies for me just don't hold up for me in terms of acting and character development, which are really important things for me in fiction these days. I really value good performances from the actors and good, not just good, you know, but I guess like relatable performances and, you know, performances with some subtext, you know, and character development is really important to me. I don't really get engaged in stories that are just about like what's happening and the problem that people are trying to solve. I care about how they feel about that problem, how solving it will affect their life or improve it, or how not solving it will make their life a living hell or whatever. You know, it's important for me to care about the characters. Otherwise, I'm just not engaged. And it's really not something that Star Wars has been primarily about ever. So that didn't surprise me going in, but I was kind of hoping that there would be more, since they seem to be going for a more grounded, serious tone. I was like, well, this thing has like a close to two hour and 20 minute runtime. Maybe they're giving it some breathing room to get into characters a little bit more and how they feel and think about things and what motivates them. And I really didn't feel like they did that in this movie. I want to be clear that I have no particular hatred or dislike of Star Wars. I loved Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. I'd love some more of that, please. But I also have no nostalgia or particular love for the franchise, which means that this movie, for me, was very forgettable and hardly engaged me at all in the way that I really like to be engaged. Though I suspect that Star Wars fans will love this movie. I personally long for Star Wars to be free of the shackles of its history. You know, in The Force Awakens, all kinds of callbacks and returns of old characters that are just now older, and we've got a lot of that going on in this movie. It's not as frequent, but there's these cameos all over the place of small characters, big characters from the original Star Wars trilogy. So I want Star Wars to be free of those shackles. I think that's one of the reasons I liked Knights of the Old Republic, which is a video game. If you weren't aware of that, it takes place like thousands of years before the Episode One, and it had totally different characters. It still had Jedis and stuff, and it looked very much like Star Wars, oddly enough. But it allowed them to have a different tone if they wanted to have a different tone, and just do totally different things and tell a different type of story with totally different characters in the same universe, with still lightsabers and force powers and roguish thieves and all that kind of stuff. So I like all that stuff. I would just love to see all of that stuff with brand new characters, not a trace. Like after this episode, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. After episode 9, I want them to leap the timeline forward 1,000 years so that we don't have to have any references to previous Star Wars stuff, any dependency on nostalgia. It's just about telling new stories in new ways with a new feel and a new tone if they want. I just free Star Wars from its shackles, that's my personal desire for the series. But I know that that's not going to serve them well, especially right now. It may never serve them well. Right now, I think they need to play to nostalgia as they re-engage audiences with Star Wars. General audiences, let's see here. I would even like blasphemy to see them remake the classic trilogy. Okay, if you want to tell that story again, fine, let's tell that story again. If that really is Star Wars, the story of the Skywalker family, fine, let's remake all of them without Lucas involved, with these great new directors, and allow it to have a totally different tone or something like that. So anyway, all that to say, that's kind of where I'm coming from. I know this isn't strictly me talking about, doing a review of Rogue One, but I feel like I have to share where I'm at with Star Wars in general in order for my comments on Rogue One to make the most sense to you. There is I won't spoil any details about it, but there's an awesome Darth Vader scene in this that made me want to shout, "Yes! Remake the classic trilogy with this kind of Darth Vader action! Yes! Yes!" So yeah, I would love to see that happen, but it won't, and that's fine. But even though my wife laughed and shook her head at the classic 77 era helmets that they brought back for this movie, which makes sense because, again, it takes place right parallel in the middle of, episode 4, kind of, or right before, I guess, episode 4, she confessed that she wouldn't have enjoyed this movie as much if they didn't have those old school trappings, like these pins that the admirals or generals or whatever the crap they are wear that like have no discernible difference. Like there were two figures, she said, that she saw, one that was reporting to the other, and they both had the exact same set of pins. She was like, okay, so do you have to look really close to see the difference in rank that's being indicated there, or what the crap, so anyway, nostalgia, she confessed, significantly aided her enjoyment. The main character, Jin, is barely interesting to me. There was some father-daughter elements that, I always connect with, familial relationships, especially father-son stuff, but I like father-daughter stuff, too, so there was a little bit of that, and that engaged me in those moments, but it was very brief, very fleeting, she was just not really interesting to me for most of the movie. Almost everyone else, I felt like, was a blank slate or just kind of a one-note character. You've got, the disagreeable sidekick. It's not that they don't have character, that they don't have personality. They do, but it's just like this kind of almost a one-note kind of personality with very little and sometimes no character development among them. The disagreeable sidekick, you've got the wise old kung fu master, the regretful father, etc., etc. All these kind of like people that are basically like, okay, I've seen that kind of character before, and I know what that kind of character is, and that's all they were to me. It's just like characters. They weren't any deeper than that. They weren't closer to people that I could relate to or motivations that I could relate to. The main villain is basically just ambitious middle management. I was really hoping for something more charismatic or psychologically interesting or disturbing or intimidating about him, but he was he basically came across to me as just like ambitious middle management, which was, oh, that was a bummer. So yeah, as I said before, I hoped for more character and motivations to be explored with this one, given its runtime, but oh well. The cast is all fine, very little character material to work with, I felt, so I won't really comment on them, but I thought they all did a fine job. Okay, let's talk about the visuals. Here it comes. Grand Moff Tarkin. Is that his name? Grand Moff Tarkin? See, if I said that wrong, then I get some credit. If not, I didn't lose any because, you know, as I said, I'm not a big Star Wars fan. But I think that's the guy's name. The skinny guy from Episode 4 who gets blown up along with the Death Star. That actor, I imagine, is dead by now. He was old in Episode 4 when it came out in, what, 77, I think that was? But they wanted to bring that character back. And not just in a little cameo, he's the authority, he's the superior to the main villain of Rogue One. What I wish they would have done is have him be somewhere else and the main villain reporting to him via, like, hologram transmission. So you could fuzz things up a little bit with static. And then I think it would have been like, dang, that's amazing what they just did. That's amazing. I cannot tell that that's fake or whatever. Like, if they would have just fuzzed up the visuals a little bit. But instead, they had this dude in the room, like a video game character walking around. Now, I gotta say, I am cursed. My eye is cursed that I'm just able to pick out CG, particularly when it's biological creatures or people being portrayed. If it's a car, you can maybe fool me. But for some reason, my eyes are cursed. If it is an animal walking around or a person talking, or especially people and their faces, I'm just cursed. I wish I wasn't, but that's where I'm at. My wife, the whole time, she didn't know that Grand Moff Tarkin was digital. I asked her about it afterwards. There was another character that was digital that I won't spoil that was a resurrection of, an Episode 4 character. And she was like, oh, well, that had to be, did they recast? She asked me, did they recast or was that a digital recreation or something like that? I was like, that's digital. I said, did you notice Grand Moff Tarkin, who was in a ton of scenes throughout the movie? And she said she didn't even notice. So, awesome. My hat's off to you, and I'm happy for you if you aren't cursed the way that I am. But for me, I was like, dang, these actors are looking at a tennis ball this whole time, and that is one creepy-looking rubber-faced tennis ball if I ever saw one. Oh, man. And then they got someone else's voice, which at times was a good match, and other times I was like, this is a different voice. Anyway, I think they did what they could, but again, I feel like Hollywood does not have an awareness of the limitations of CG technology. The good news is, in 20 to 30 years, if I'm still alive, maybe there'll be like a remake, some kind of remaster technologically, where they redo the special effects, because in 10, 15 years, they will have finally mastered this, and we'll be able to go back and, watch this movie without, and you're just wondering, wow, they brought that actor back from the dead, that's amazing. Or we'll be able to watch the second and third Matrix trilogy and be like, wow, I'm not watching Toy Story anymore, did I say the second and third Matrix trilogy? I wish there was more than one Matrix trilogy. Anyway, all right, let me try to wind this whole thing down. The rest of the visuals included great effects and practical explosions that were mixed with kind of old-timey style laser blasts still. So the whole movie was this weird blend of, like, modern filmmaking sensibilities, techniques, and technology with, like, old, cheap sci-fi 70s aesthetic. Nostalgia may help you, though. I think it did in the case of my wife, so I think that's going to help a lot of people. I don't always talk about the music. I want to comment on it this time. It wasn't by John Williams. Michael Giacchino, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he did the score on this one, and it felt a lot like a 70s Star Wars score. The Force Awakens did not feel to me largely like a 70s Star Wars score. It was like, oh, cool, they're doing some modern scoring here. But I guess they felt like they wanted to go back, maybe because it takes place right before Episode 4, they wanted to go back to that 70s Star Wars scoring aesthetic. You know, it's melodramatic, and it's kind of more old-timey sounding. And this, combined with some character performances and the overall script, gave the movie for me an overly simplistic vibe that kept me from really relating emotionally to the story and to the characters and to the choices and to the action. For me, being true to the classic music aesthetic here also meant using a musical aesthetic that distracted me from engaging with the story. But again, I think nostalgia may help you here, because it definitely gives some of those Star Wars feels. If you're looking for Star Wars feels, you are going to get feels in this movie, I think. Maybe more so than when you watched The Force Awakens last year. All right, so is there anything of moral, spiritual, philosophical significance in this movie that might trigger some worthwhile thought or conversation? Well, maybe. It was interesting. I predicted that there would be no Jedis in this movie, which is no big surprise. I think a lot of people, maybe that was even leaked or that came out at some point and I just never, you know, caught wind of that. But I also predicted that there would be more talk about the Force in this movie to kind of compensate for the fact that there are no Jedis in this movie. And compared to The Force Awakens, there is definitely more Force talk in this movie. The main character is told in a pivotal moment to trust the Force, and that's a phrase that is then called back to at least once or twice throughout the rest of the movie. It's a really major phrase, trust the Force. And then there's another character doing a ritualistic prayer throughout the movie, saying again and again, I am one with the Force is with me, I'm one of the Force is with me. And then another person kind of takes up that, and you know, a little bit later, saying, you know, rearranged, the Force is with me, I'm one with the Force is with me, I'm one with the Force. And that's just kind of like their prayer, their little mantra that they're saying, you know, over and over again. And then the hero also dramatically and seriously pronounces before the climax that the Force is with us, you know. But if you're a Star Wars fan, you know the Force has a dark side, right? That thrives on anger and hatred. So I think, you know, is the Force really trustworthy? Do we really want to trust in the Force? Because the Force might be having a bad day today and might be dealing out death and destruction at the hands of the Sith. So, in light of the same fact, do we want the Force to be with us? Or does that kind of selfishly mean, I want the Force to do what I want to do and be with me and do my bidding, you know? But I don't know, when you say trust the Force, I think what they intend by saying may the Force be with you is that the Force is a good thing and we want it to be, you know, with us and near us, you know. Well, God is good. God has no evil in him. But the Force has this whole dark side, which I understand is completely equal to the light side, which is never called good. There's no good and evil, I guess, in the Star Wars universe. There's just light and dark, whatever the crap that means. And what we're striving for, according to the other parts of the trilogy, is some kind of balance. So it's actually ideal for, if you have a room full of 10 people, for 5 of them to be brutally tortured and 5 of them to just have wonderful lives. That's what this Force, I guess, is striving for. So, hey, trust in the Force, kids. Good things coming. likewise, a character mourns the fact that he didn't listen to his heart as he had been advised. But our hearts, you know, the people we are on the inside, have a dark side too. So again, you know, we have to ask, how do we know when to listen to our hearts? Especially if by hearts we're talking about feelings, internal feelings, subjective feelings and emotions. Whoa, that's some scary territory to make that your authority and the thing that you follow and submit to and give into, you know, all the time. Philosophically, the Star Wars universe has never been strong in its internal logic, and this movie is no exception. But I think when we choose to place our trust in something or someone, we ought to ask first if that thing or person is trustworthy, or does it, like we all do, have a dark side that could do us some harm? I have no idea what your tastes in movies are or what your taste in Star Wars is, so I'm not talking to you right now, but if I were a time traveler, I'd go back in time and say, Peter, hey, skip this one. You are not the audience. Go fire up some Farscape or Battlestar Galactica, or better yet, if you're in a Star Wars-y kind of mood by chance, go fire up Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic and play through that again. This is not the Star Wars experience that you're looking for. Right, you got to put in some kind of little gimmicky pun or joke or whatever the crap. All right. I'm just trying to do this YouTube thing, guys. Trying to get them clicks. This one's rated PG-13 for extended sequences of sci-fi violence and action. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, and Helix Reviews! Did not get quite a deep enough breath that time. For more info about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
All right, guys. Well, I'm going off-grid from December 16th through January 4th. So, I mean, I will be checking my emails, mainly just for orders, on the 16th, on Friday, which is when this podcast is going up. And then, again, one last time on Monday to fill any orders that were placed during the sale period. But all the orders that are placed the 19th through the 4th will be processed on the 5th. Physical orders and gift code orders. But like digital orders that are not gift codes should process automatically, and you should still be able to get your downloads and stuff. But yeah, so I'm basically going to be, I'll still be working some during that time, and I may be unpredictably reachable on the forums. But I, you know, so I don't plan on cutting myself off from, you know, the forums, and will, you know, enjoy getting on there as I think of it and as I can to just kind of, you know, geek out with you guys during the Christmas and the New Year season. But I won't be checking email during that time or putting out podcast episodes the weekends of December 23rd and December 30th. But stay tuned to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral if you don't want to wait for my reviews of the Assassin's Creed movie and the Passengers movie. I'm planning on doing reviews for those and putting them up on YouTube as soon as I've recorded them, you know, as I usually would. Assassin's Creed, I plan on seeing the day it releases, which is a Wednesday. The 21st, I think. And then Passengers releases that same day, but I'm going to wait and probably catch that between Christmas and New Year's as like a date night with Holly, and then I'll record my thoughts on that. So somewhere between Christmas and New Year's is where I think my Passengers review will go up. But that's really only, you know, if you're just kind of wanting a little bit of pater itch scratched. That sounds like a weird fungal condition. If you have any kind of like weird pater zones that you're itching, let me know. We gotta treat that. So yeah, but the both of those reviews I'm planning on being on the podcast when it comes back. On January 6th is my plan. So, yeah. So just know that if you do watch those videos, that the content will be a little bit redundant when you come back to it on the 6th. Although there will be, that's going to be like three movie reviews, because I'm also planning on reviewing the new Underworld movie on that episode. And of course, coming back to In Search of Truth and other stuff like that. So, no, I'm not planning on doing In Search of Truth that week, just because it's going to be three movie reviews, just, you know, overloaded already. So, but anyway, there you have that, blah, 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 notes, blah, blah, blah. I think I covered all that about me going off grid. At youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, by the time that you hear this, you should be able to find the video version of my Rogue One review. At youtube.com/SpiritBladeVideos, you can listen to part three of my commentary for Spirit Blade: World of Shadows. It's actually a video commentary where I'm listening to the audio track, which I kind of have split a little bit. I did get one comment that that maybe indicates to me that I need to split it a little further to the left and right. I put most of the audio drama audio in the left speaker, most of me in the right speaker. So if one is too loud, you can just kind of adjust your panning to get more of me or less of me or whatever. But anyway, the third one of those commentaries is up now at youtube.com/SpiritBladeVideos. And you can also get that on our website, spiritblade.com. Speaking of which, these are the final days of our big sale at spiritblade.com. From now until the end of Sunday, December 18th, 2016, you can still get big savings on our audio dramas. So CD sets, digital downloads, and gift codes are all at significant discounts right now. I don't do these sales as often these days as I used to, so this may be your last chance for a while to get some discounts on these things. You can spice up those holiday travel days, which a lot of us have coming up, or put some audio dramas in a stocking this year, which would be a great way also, of course, to support Spirit Blade Productions. So for preview trailers and more information, visit spiritblade.com. Lastly, if you want to help make sure that Spirit Blade Productions can keep doing what we're doing or do more of it, both faster and better, you're invited to make a donation of any amount, anytime, or become a part of the Spirit Blade Insider Program and get monthly exclusive goodies. In addition to just some bonus goodies that come along out of the blue sometimes, for example, this Saturday, I'm having a Google Hangout exclusively with Spirit Blade Insiders. During my big bake-a-thon on Saturday, I'm taking an hour and just going to be hanging out on Google Hangouts with the insiders while I bake. So anyway, if you want more information about the Spirit Blade Insider Program, visit our About page at spiritblade.com. And while you're there, you're invited, of course, to also support us by purchasing a download of one of our original sci-fi or fantasy audio dramas for a friend or family member with one of our available gift codes. Again, for more info, spiritblade.com. Well, recently I put the call out to our community on the forums for Christmas stories that are geek-related, just like fond memories that you have that combine some element of geekery and some element of Christmas, and this is what I heard back from you guys.
Hello, Pater, and everyone watching. This is Matt McKinney.
And off-screen Kim.
She's off-screen, of course. And we're going to reflect on our Christmas memories of the Lord of the Rings movies back in 2001, 2, and 3. Of course, those movies came out at Christmas time, and for me, and I think also for Kim, those were really strongly tied to Christmas, seeing it for the first time. I remember in 2001 seeing Fellowship of the Ring, and we actually went and saw it on Christmas night, because we were going to go see it on Christmas Eve night, because my pastor and his family, they were going to go on a mission trip over the Christmas holiday, so we actually had Christmas on the 21st. They gave me the Lord of the Rings books, and I read through the first book and The Hobbit, so I was well up to date, but I didn't know where the story was going to go, and oh my gosh, it was so thrilling. You're the Tolkien nut, Kim. You tell us, what did you think when you first saw it? When did you realize this was a great movie?
Before I went to see it, I knew it was going to be good, because I had seen trailers, and they did an exclusive of the cave troll fight on TV.
I remember seeing that.
And I knew it was going to be good, and it was so amazing getting to see it up on a huge screen, realized. And I had one friend in our group who did not know what was going on, who was not a Tolkien reader, and watching her freak out in different parts of the story where she didn't know what was coming were very interesting. I remember she was very upset by Gandalf's death.
Yeah.
And I kind of looked at my other
friend. I knew it was coming and I was upset by it.
I looked at my other friend and I'm like, should we tell her? Yeah, let's tell her.
Don't ruin it for the people watching this now. Really, if you don't already know that he comes back, that's your own fault.
If you don't know, what are you doing here?
Yeah, and I remember that. I remember thinking when I first saw it, just especially when they were running after they fought the trolls and the cave troll and the goblins, and they were running and the Balrog was chasing them, and that music, that was really what I was like. That's the first time I actually noticed the music in the movies, because I'd been so caught up in the story. And just, I remember that part where Arwen has Frodo, and this was slightly different from the book, but I knew the gist of what would happen. And so when the Nazgul were crossing and threatening with their swords, I was laughing out loud. And I wasn't laughing because it's like, yeah, get her. I was laughing because I knew the comeuppance that was about to come. And that's exactly what happened, and it was great.
Well, and for me, one of the most interesting things was not just having gone to see it with my friends, but then every subsequent Christmas was when I got the extended edition.
Yeah, so it was almost like a second movie. Yeah.
From my family. And I remember when I first got Fellowship of the Ring, trying to persuade my family to watch it with me. They were not terribly interested, but my parents did watch it. And
they're not usually watching fantasy things, but it was in vogue at the time.
They were so confused. And my dad was just not having it. You know, all sorts of things he would just kind of grumble about. Well, this is dumb and that is dumb and the other thing is silly and strange. And
I've met her dad, I can believe this.
One of the things that most got me with my dad was the scene where Aragorn and Arwen meet up and they start talking in Elvish with the subtitles. And my dad goes, now what the heck is this? And I go, it's Elvish, Dad.
He's a Star Trek fan. He should understand that.
And that's what I compared it to. I said, it's like Klingon. It's a language. It's got grammar and everything. And I closed my mouth shut on the next words that were going to come out because I saw the look on his face. Because the next words were going to be, I don't really need the subtitles. My family didn't need that at the time. It was hard enough living with a Tolkien freak like me.
And, you know, those are just a few reflections on Christmas of 2001. We can have tell our own stories about 2002 and 2003 with Two Towers and Return of the King, but we'll save those for future years. That's enough for now. We'll see you guys later.
G'day, Adam David Collings here, and I've got some geeky Christmas memories to share with you. Now, I actually credit Christmas with birthing my love of Star Trek. So it's Christmas morning. I'm a young boy. I don't remember exactly what age, but it's the early to mid-80s. So I'm opening my present, and one of the things I find inside is an A4 hardcover book with a big spaceship on the cover. And it says the Star Trek Annual. Now, my mum explains that this is based on an old TV show that she watched when she was young, and it'd be right up my alley. I'm already a geek at this point. Star Wars and Superman were huge at the time, and I was a big fan of the Superman movie, like, huge fan of it. So I knew that I was going to enjoy this, and of course I did. The book contains two original stories in comic book format. One of them, I remember, featured the Enterprise crew exploring an icy planet with a race of aliens that had red, scaly skin. So it wasn't long after that they started showing repeats of the original series on Saturday at lunchtime. So it became a bit of a family tradition for us to watch Star Trek while we ate lunch. And then, of course, I started watching the movies, and then came The Next Generation, and I never looked back. But it all started that Christmas morning.
Merry Christmas, geeks!
Alright, another geeky Christmas memory. This is years later. By now I'm a teenager, probably grade 9 or 10. So I remember my parents asking my brother and I what we wanted for Christmas that year. And neither of us could really think of anything specific that we wanted. So Mum and Dad said, right, we're going to go shopping and we'll figure something out for you. So off they went. The present appears under the tree Christmas morning. It's kind of an oddly shaped package. I'm really curious about what's in there because I've got no idea. Anyway, I open it up, and the major thing in there was this big cardboard box, and it said Turbo Pascal 6.0 with objects. And I knew what this was straight away. So I open up the box, and I'm looking for the objects. Of course, I couldn't find them because they were data structures. But the main thing in the box were about five big, thick manuals and a bunch of 5 1/4-inch floppy disks. So I'd been playing around with GW Basic for a long time, but this was my first real programming language, and I was really excited. Now, as was our custom, we went away in the caravan for our Christmas holiday. This was always fun, some really special times. Of course, it meant being away from the computer, and that bit was hard because I really missed the computer. But I took my manuals with me to read, and I remember one night or afternoon, I think it might have been raining, actually, but we're sitting there in the caravan. I'm reading my Turbo Pascal manual. And I remember coming to the realisation this was a compiled language, which meant I could take my code and I could turn it into an executable file. And I just got so excited. I don't think anyone else in the family had any idea what I was on about. But I was happy. So if that doesn't make me a geek, I don't know what does. So anyway, those are my geeky Christmas memories. I hope you're having a good Christmas. So, God bless, live long and prosper, make it so. Merry Christmas!
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
In this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language that we often take for granted, digging into history and languages when I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in scripture. I'm just a guy using resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth. And that's something we can all do in today's awesome internet age. So I hope that you'll do that with me. This time, we're taking a short break, actually, from our journey through the book of Ephesians to take a look at the core concept behind Christmas and how it has huge relevance for us, both during this season and all year long. What theologians call the incarnation refers to the concept of God becoming fully human, but still being every bit God. So in other words, he didn't change from God into a human. He added full humanity to himself without removing anything of who he is. And the idea raises like all kinds of questions. You know, if everything is held together in Christ, as Colossians 1:17 says, then how did the universe not fall apart while Jesus was uncontrollably pooping his diapers? If Jesus was God throughout his childhood and ministry, how could he learn anything or have limited knowledge, as is implied by John 8:28 and Mark 13:32? How could God die if he is life itself, as we see in John 14:6? Well, in response to these questions, theologians present the idea that Jesus had two complete natures, so that in his divinity, in his divine nature, he remained all-knowing and all-powerful and undying. And yet, in his humanity, he was vulnerable with limited knowledge. Now, if you think theology is boring, stick with me. We're actually almost done with this theology part. We're heading into territory that likely depends on minds that are capable of higher than like linear four-dimensional thought, which is really what we are limited to. So realize that when we get into this stuff, metaphors are likely all going to fall short when they get picked apart. That said, the two natures concept of Jesus suggests that in some sense, Jesus in his divine nature willingly compartmentalized in some way his divinity without losing it, to take on humanity in its fullness with all its limitations. He was completely dependent on God the Father for both normal day-to-day life and for his miraculous deeds, which were only possible in his human nature because he submitted and united his will with the Father, which I think we see in John chapter 5, verses 19 through 21. Okay, theology part done. All that to say, it's vitally important for us to realize that Jesus lived a painful, crappy life, and being God did not somehow make it all easy for him. As we saw in our look at the book of Hebrews, Hebrews 4:15 in the ESV says, we do not have a high priest, you know, in other words, someone who intercedes between for us as a mediator between us and God. We do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect, talking about Jesus now, has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. That's interesting to think about. Often when we are tempted, the duress of fighting our inclinations becomes too uncomfortable or takes too much effort, so we just give in and experience the fleeting pleasure or relief that giving in provides us. You know, whether that's telling off somebody, you know, or giving in to some kind of sexual sin or whatever the thing is that gives us pleasure or some kind of relief and satisfaction. You know, we can't stand fighting our inclinations, and so we give in and we get that sense of pleasure or relief. Jesus fought temptation and never allowed himself that fleeting pleasure or that relief of giving in. So he experienced temptation to I would wager a more extended and uncomfortable degree than we do. Jesus also knew better than we do what it's like to be rejected by people and considered worthless. Chances are, if you're a geek, you've experienced some of that in your life to some degree or another. And that kind of rejection, that kind of dismissiveness, that kind of judgment from others and being considered worthless, it hurt him, I believe, more than it hurts us, because he loved people so much more deeply than you and I do, making the sting of their rejection far worse. And I come to that conclusion just based on my reactions to Matthew 23:17 and Luke 19:41-44. Jesus approached the city of Jerusalem, and just approaching the city, he thought about all the people that were there and how they had turned away from God, and it just caused him to weep. That's love. That's I am so calloused that I don't. That's not me. I don't have that. But Jesus loved so deeply. That's where he was. Anyway, Jesus also was prophetically described as a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. Isaiah 53:3 says that. And he was known to pray not just with like this kind of urgency or passion, but like crying out loudly amidst tears. And we see that in Hebrews 5:7. When's the last time you and I cried out, literally cried out loudly, shouting with tears running down our face? That's what Jesus was known to do. So he knows what it's like to be in the trenches and to just have a crappy life and to feel deeply and to be hurt deeply. We can think of God as a removed clockmaker who set things in motion and then walked away. A lot of people do, but that's not the truth. For whatever reason, and I mean, I could give some reasons, but even as I look at those, I'm like, yeah, but at the end of the day, why? I have to say, I don't know. So for whatever reason, he created us to be significant. And he sealed that significance by first making us a reflection of him on some level, and then making himself to be like us. I don't get it. I haven't mentioned his death for us yet, because most of us will probably not have to die because of our obedience to God. But we can relate to being judged and rejected by others. And it's the common ground Jesus shares with us that I want to emphasize right now as we all head into Christmas and New Year's Eve. This is possibly the most social time of year for us geeks. We'll be willingly or unwillingly crammed in rooms with people we aren't used to spending lots of time with. Maybe that's coworkers at some kind of office party. Maybe that's friends, people at church. Maybe that's family that we're not used to spending a lot of time with, you know. And some of those people, friends, family, whoever, will see the world very differently than we do. And that may passively or even openly express itself in a way that feels judgmental or dismissive, or maybe really is judgmental or dismissive. Either way, there's a good chance we're going to feel that. We need to know that in those times, Jesus did not go into like a Spock mode and stop feeling. He maintained composure, but I don't think he stopped feeling. He was gracious in the moment. Religious leaders being a possible exception at times, although, just by not jolting them with lightning bolts, he was being pretty gracious with them. But aside from the religious leaders, you just see just the ridiculous patience that he had. And I don't mean ridiculous in a judgmental way. Obviously, he was perfect. And I wish that I could have the ridiculous grace that he did. But it just, you know, by our standards, was just like, holy crap, how are you so patient with people? How in the world are you so stinking patient with people? But he was so gracious in the moment, meeting people where they were at. Even though they should have been in a different place and a better place, he met them where they were at. And then later, he would take time to be by himself and he would cry with God about what he was experiencing, what he was mourning. You know, and that last part, going to God and crying about it, might sound weak or immature in our modern cultural context. So maybe that's an indicator that actually we should change our definition of spiritual maturity. You know, being real with God. I mean, if we read our Psalms and look at the life of Jesus, we see godly, spiritually mature models of faith being real and bringing their tears to God. And that's what he wants us to do. He wants us to bring him our tears. And he also wants us to control our emotions so we can be composed and meet people where they are at. It's about having the right emotions at the right time. If you're looking for a meaningful spiritual activity as you head into this season, I want to recommend sitting down and quietly reading the entire book of Philippians in one go. Don't worry, it's a short one. I think it took me, 10, 15 minutes, something like that. As we're going through the book of Ephesians right now, in order to cast vision for the kind of community Christian Geek Central can be, Philippians, I think, is a great companion book to that, as Paul models, as he does in many of his writings, long-distance, text-based relationships for us, certainly very relevant to our lives today. In addition to primarily presenting vision for our in-person relationships. And I mean, there's just fantastic stuff in that. I didn't even put in my notes here, but like if you read, not only is there stuff about our social interactions with others, there's stuff about anxiety, you know, in the back part of that book, and our thought life, and, you know, how our minds, what we're allowing our minds to focus on, and you know, what we should be focusing on as we're dealing with anxiety. I mean, this great, great stuff, especially for the Christmas season, if the social situations bring any level of anxiety or frustration or whatever. It's just a great book for this time of year. Anyway, in a key passage of Philippians, Paul brings out both the common ground Jesus shares with us because of his incarnation and the way we ought to share common ground with him as we carry out our relationships, whether those relationships are online or in person, whether with family or with friends. Now, granted, Paul is teaching in the context of our relationships with other Christians, but most, if not all, of these principles apply to relationships with non-believers as well. Philippians 2, 1 through 8 in the ESV says, "So if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in the Spirit, any affection and sympathy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. And being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross." Did you notice how real this gets? How internally transformative the intention is? The language here isn't about modifying our behavior so we can all play nicely together. That actually doesn't work. Because try as we might, our selfishness, our defensiveness, our insecurity, it can all only be hidden or contained through willpower for so long. It is so easy to approach the Christian life as behavior modification, as this intellectual thing where we look at the Bible and we say, oh, yes, this is a good way to live, and this is how I, you know, this is how I should, you know, think about things and do things, da-da-da-da-da. And then we tell ourselves that we're thinking that way and doing those things, da-da-da, but it's ultimately just by willpower. And it's not really in our heart of hearts changing our perspective and how we really genuinely look at things and think about things and feel about things. The Holy Spirit, through Paul, is calling us to change the way we think and feel about others. You know, as geeks, we love to nitpick, we love to get passionate about our differing views, but the bulk of our interactions should actually be aiming for unity. I'm not saying that we can't do those things ever, but the bulk of our interactions should be aiming for unity. We're called to have the same mindset whenever possible, have the same love for the things that are important, looking for every point of agreement and unity we can find. And I'm pulling that thought from verse 2. Looking at verses 3 and 4, we're not called to cover our selfish motives. You know, it's, okay, I got to stuff that down. I got to like try not to think about that, you know, and there's value in, you know, trying not to think about something, but it's better to replace our thoughts than to just try to avoid thoughts. You know, we're not called to cover our selfish motives. We're called to find different motivations for what we do. We're not called to treat others as more significant than us, but to actually view them as more significant than us. You know, look at them and say, you know, we think, okay, God has great plans for me and he's calling me. This is a process I go through when I think about like doing Christian Geek Radar or doing something else that's promoting something else, and I don't get in contact with them like a lot of people do. And part of this is just because I hate rejection. And so I, you know, this is, you know, kind of serves as a good excuse for that as well. But in addition, it's about me trying to just view others as more significant than myself. You know what? I don't need to, you know, this is the, I'm just giving a little snapshot of my diary. This isn't in my notes here. But, you know, when I'm thinking of promoting what someone else is doing, you know, I don't necessarily reach out to them and say, you know, hey, you want to do some cross promotion? It's just like, you know what? I'm just going to promote them because God made what I see them doing is good and there's excellence in it. And it's, and from what I can see, it is adhering with Scripture, and it is aiming to value Scripture and uphold Scripture in the way it conducts itself, you know, whatever this entity is, this person, this project, this community, whatever it is. And maybe God wants to do something bigger through them than he wants to do through me and Spirit Blade Productions. So I just want to view that as very possible, that they are more significant in God's kingdom plans than I am. And so I want to think about them and their interests, and not just my own. So we shouldn't, and when we're talking to people, I think the same thing is true. You know, it can be easy to want to like turn the conversation to talking about our opinions about, you know, movies or games or whatever, you know. Actually, in my conversations with people, I really don't talk about my opinions a ton, typically, because I just feel like, you know, if they want to hear me blab on something and they really want to know, well, then they'll ask and they'll follow up. And, you know, some people ask just like, oh, what did you think of this? I'll give them, you know, a short little, it wasn't my thing, or, oh, man, I really enjoyed that. And sometimes I'll expand a little bit, but I kind of feel like, you know, we can have blogs where we really go nuts, you know, and we've got podcasts and YouTube channels. All those things are options for us. You know, in my conversations with folks, I try, because it's not my natural tendency, I have to really work at this, I try to be interested more than I am interesting to other people. I try to take interest in what their thoughts are and what their dreams and life goals are and what their, you know, what's important to them this week and what they're thinking about and what's going on in their life, you know. And I think that's part of what Paul is getting at in these verses in verse 3 and 4. Now, maybe as a quick side note, this is a long In Search of Truth segment, so I apologize if you don't normally listen for this segment. But a quick side note, maybe you're asking yourself right now, how do I do that? You know, how do I actually change my motives? Like, really change my motives? How do I change the way I think and feel about things? That's just the way I think and feel about things. How do you change that? That's just who I am. Well, you might notice that in verse 1, the origin, and I think what should serve as the catalyst for the changes Paul is talking about, the origin of all these things that Paul is calling us to is a combination of encouragement in Christ, comfort from love, participation in the Spirit, affection, and sympathy. So those are things that we want to be genuinely experiencing, because they will help feed into what Paul is calling us to in our relationships with others. In my life, those things all develop because of my in-person relationships with believers who are further along in the faith than I am. So if you haven't been to a local church in a while, or if you're at a church where, you know, maybe you're even deeply involved, but you just can't imagine really being able to genuinely relate to the leaders, sitting down with them, you know, having coffee, hanging out or whatever, you just can't see yourself really having a friendship with any of them for whatever reason. Or if you have the same feeling about not just the leaders of your church, but, you know, other Christians there that are older and wiser than you that you might, you know, potentially have, be able to talk to, you know, if there's just nobody at your church that's older and wiser than you in the faith that you can see yourself like reaching out to and, you know, getting together with on a recurring basis, just to have coffee or whatever and talk and learn from them and share life with them, that are older and wiser than you, that's important, older and wiser than you in the faith, then I want to encourage you to make January the time that you start checking out Bible-teaching churches in your local community. Not churches that just teach, you know, kind of nice ideas and thoughts and morality from the pulpit, but that are actually getting into Scripture as the content of their sermon and their teaching on Sunday mornings. That's the kind of church that I think we really need to be at and be supporting and be learning from and growing in. That's where we're going to find those older and wiser Bible-focused Christians that we really need to have relationships with. Having those kinds of relationships are so much more important than anything else you could be involved in a church for, which is why I think it's worth, even if you're deeply involved somehow in some kind of function of the church or whatever, however you're serving, if there are no prospects for relationships with older and wiser Bible-focused Christians at your church, I would plead with you to either find those in your church that you haven't found yet, or look at another church. Because a church that I firmly believe this, and this is a little bit of a rabbit trail, I apologize again. I firmly believe that if a church is Bible focused, it produces people that are older and wiser than you, that are ready to be real with you and have coffee and just be real with you. I firmly believe that Bible teaching churches that have a Bible focus produce those kinds of believers. And so you should be able to find them at your church. And if you can't, then there's a good chance there's something going wrong there. And that you'd be much better off at a different church. And I want to be clear, I do not often suggest finding another church. I think that we jump to that way too quickly. When there's something we don't like, somebody that's offended us, somebody that's gotten on our nerves, and da da da. Usually we leave churches because there's some conflict we don't want to resolve, or some way in which we don't want to talk to the leadership and call them up to something higher, or be called up to something higher by our leadership. You know, usually it's something like that causes us to, and so I really want to be careful not to like encourage you guys to be quick on that trigger to go find another church, you know. But this, I think, is a reason to do that, because as I said, those relationships will feed your growth more than anything else, and which in turn will make any other ministry you do so much more useful and in line with God's will. That's why I think it's foundational, these kinds of relationships. You guys benefit, if you are finding value in these In Search of Truth segments, you benefit from the relationship I have had for about 10 years now, close to 10 years, with my mentor. His name's Dave Lindstrom. He's one of the elders at our church. He's also my dentist. But he got his master's in biblical studies, and he's all kinds of geeky, fluent in Hebrew and Greek and that kind of stuff. But he's also a man who has been applying scripture to his day-to-day life for decades. And so when I meet with him about every 3 weeks, I get to benefit from that. I get to be encouraged by him. I get to have my perspective challenged by him. And so everything else that I do benefits from that. And I have grown and been able to give to others from myself things that were not true of me, that I wasn't able to give, you know, a few years ago because of my time with him. So I really just want to encourage you in that too. That's it. So back on Jesus and the incarnation, Jesus was really the ultimate model of the mindset that we should increasingly develop. He didn't see his equal status with God as something to hold on to tightly. He became an obedient servant to the extent that it brought about a horrible death. Now, again, you and I may never have to face that, but, you know, let's be honest, it can hyperbolically feel a little like dying when we choose to meet people where they are at, instead of letting them have it with what we really want to say, you know, or looking for common ground with people that we're just having trouble connecting with. Looking for ways to support them, you know, instead of steering attention toward our thoughts, our accomplishments, our dreams, you know, or, you know, instead of walking into a room of people with kind of a snappy comeback at the ready, because we feel like, okay, somebody's going to talk about the fact that I love such and such a thing, but I've got this Bible verse ready to go, baby. Yeah, and I'm not saying it's not, you know, we want to have Bible verses ready to go, but I think you can tell from my tone that I'm talking about a different kind of attitude, you know, that we kind of cover up with our piety. Anyway, I don't want to belittle and oversimplify, you know, what a lot of you are heading into this season. I haven't experienced the level of family difficulties that I know many of you have, but I also don't have a perfect extended family that sees eye to eye on everything, and I'll probably be reminded of that this Christmas. I've been thinking about that a little bit. So what I'm asking God to help me do this season, just as I wrap up my thoughts here, is Jesus, just help me throw off my self-created burdens of self-justification or insecurity. You know, other people judge us, and that's on them. But us allowing their judgment to have weight, that's on us. That's on us. We create those burdens, and we give weight to the wrong words instead of to the words of Christ. And so we feel a need to justify ourselves because we again forget the grace and the righteousness of Jesus that has been placed on top of our record. You know, that's on us. So Jesus, help me, help all of us to throw off these self-created burdens of self-justification and insecurity. Get my brain off of myself and help me instead to just be waiting on the edge of my seat for every chance to encourage or to invest in someone else, in my family or at church. And then help me also in the middle of that to take any pain that I feel and experience, take that to you, Jesus. On my own, if I need to do that. Jesus knows what it's like to be rejected by his own friends and his own family. And he knows the incredible potential of still choosing to love and have patience with them in the midst of that. He's also near to us right now and ready to hear from us and share in both our difficulties and our exciting victory stories, which you may have to share with him after this season is done, as a result of making ourselves available to be used by him.
Incoming transmission.
Hey, Peter, it's John Wilkerson. I am in my car driving along listening to your latest podcast. And as always, you do an excellent job. I really appreciate what you do here and your ministry and your dedication to the podcast, to us as listeners, and to the Word of God, most importantly. So with that said, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And you mentioned you might go through Proverbs. If you want a hand with that, I would love to help you out with that, because I think I've read Proverbs 100 times at least. Did a year-long Bible study on it with my men's group. So I am intimately familiar with Proverbs, and I would love to help you with that. That's it. Keep up the great work. Again, Merry Christmas. God bless. And bye-bye.
Thanks so much, John. I may take you up on that. I've read completely through the book of Proverbs only a couple of times in my life and haven't done a real in-depth study of it myself. I've just been in it enough to know that, you know, this would be real good for us to really just dig in and understand these things and what they are saying about the world and how we should adjust our expectations. Because as I said in a previous podcast, for those who don't have context for this, I'm thinking about doing the taking us through the book of Proverbs after we're done with Ephesians, just because I think a lot of the difficulties that we experience in life as geeks is because we haven't adjusted our expectations appropriately. We are hoping and expecting things from life and from people that realistically we shouldn't. And by adjusting, by understanding the nature of the world, the nature of the human condition, which is a lot of what Proverbs is about, we can adjust our expectations so that we don't get bummed out when certain things happen or certain things are said by people or certain things are done by people. We can just have a much healthier perspective on life so that our boat is not rocked so often by things going in ways that we are not expecting. So anyway, yeah, John, I totally may take you up on that. It would be great to have you involved given your experience with the book. Thanks again for your encouragement, and on you too, Merry Christmas. I hope you and your family have a fantastic, memorable Christmas and New Year celebration. All right, guys, well, feedback. Give me your thoughts. on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? I want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central and as fun and useful as we can, but we got to hear from you to do that. So you can send an email or audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com. All right, well, I want to thank Matt McKinney and Offscreen Kim, as well as Adam Collings, for their contributions to the show today. Thank you very much for that, guys. Stay tuned for... I don't think anybody can stay tuned, but you can stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it, I'll be resting and enjoying some vacation time with family. I'm looking forward to... I'm already looking forward to some time off. I had some time off not long ago for the Thanksgiving trip that we took to go visit Holly's family in Pennsylvania. And now this Christmas is the year when, like... Mesa, Arizona is Mecca for the Franson family, and we've got out-of-town family that are coming that are going to be in town. It's going to be awesome. I'll even have... We have an aunt and uncle that moved into town a few years ago, and so now their kids are going to be coming out this year as well. So we'll even have some extended family going on, which is not normal for me. Usually it's just my parents and siblings and their families on every other year. Now we're getting... That's kind of growing a little bit, so... Oh, I'm excited. My dad does every time we have these, the France and Mecca Christmases. Should I start calling them that? I don't know. I'll ask my family, see what they think of that. He does this amazing race thing where he plants clues all over like East Mesa, you know, like all over our part of town. So, and we have to like follow this string of clues, one to the next, to the next, to the next, and come back and be the first team. We split up into teams. And be the first to, like, give him this answer in order to win or whatever. And he actually gives everybody the same prize, but that's always a lot of fun. And that's the same reason that I do the Christmas quest with Holly, because Dad... I grew up with Dad doing those kinds of things for us, just clues around the house. And now, as we're adults, he's expanded it into an exercise in reckless driving. But I now do this annual Christmas quest for Holly, which, if you go on the forums under the What's on Your Brain section, I actually put up there last year's quiz questions to see if you guys want to take a crack at those. So you're welcome to do that, and the answers are on there, and there's also a little prize as well that you can enjoy if you get all of them right. I'll let you check out the forums for more details on that. I'm also looking forward to just kind of hanging out with my boys and doing some hero questing and some Dungeons and Dragons. And I bought a side-scrolling beat-em-up bundle of two games called like something of Mystara. It's a Dungeons and Dragons beat 'em up, you know, old arcade series that got put on 360 now, so I'm looking forward to that. And also just having some fun video game time on my own. I just recently got past a hump in Mad Max. I'd put down that game for about a year because there was this race. I was like, I can't beat this. I don't know how to beat this. And I was going to save it for this special streaming event where I play only really hard, frustrating games in February, which I'm still planning on doing, but I just decided on a whim, I'd really like to play some Mad Max if I can. Let me see if I can get past this bump, and I totally beat the race and got past it. It was awesome. And now I'm totally back into Mad Max and loving that open world and crazy driving combat and, oh, fun stuff. Anyway, all that crap obviously not in my notes, but those are my plans for next week, if God allows it. But watch youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral for my Assassin's Creed and Passengers reviews if you can't wait for the podcast to return to get those reviews on January 6th, where I plan to feature both those reviews plus a review of Underworld Blood Wars. It is coming so soon. I really hope this is a return to awesome coolness for the series. I enjoyed the first three in that series, and then the fourth one when she has the daughter, and just went down the crapper for me. And I like family drama introduced into stories, but this just did not work for me. So I'm hoping this will be put the series back on track, or bring it to... I'm actually kind of hoping this is the end of the series. Because what's-her-name who plays Celine is, I mean, only getting older, and vampires are supposed to be immortal and stuff, so... So I'm kind of hoping this will kind of end the series with a bang, and will retroactively make the fourth one feel and look a little better or meaningful or something. Anyway, so I'm just prolonging this. Honestly, guys, I really enjoy sitting down and talking to you guys, even though it's not live and it's just recorded. I really enjoy doing this and sharing this kind of interaction with you guys, and so I'm kind of feeling like I want to prolong this a little bit, but no, we got to end it. January 6th, I plan to be back, if God allows it. Till then, check out SpiritBlade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you guys. Thank you so much for making time for this show this whole year, if you've been with me this whole year, or just this first episode, if this is your first one. I so appreciate you guys. I hope that you have a great week, a couple of weeks, with family and friends, or just quiet moments by yourself, as you just kind of think about just the rich, ridiculous future and promise and hope that we have because of what Jesus did in becoming a human. And I also hope that you join me here on this podcast next time as we continue to geek out and seek the truth. To close things out, I'm going to play my rendition of O Come, Emmanuel. It's actually very dated to my ears, which is why I didn't put it up anywhere last year. And I don't think I put it up the year before either. I'm not sure. But I thought about putting it up last year. I was like, ugh, I don't like this anymore. It's very dated to my ears now. But I think I'm my own worst critic, honestly. I may tinker with it next year before I put it up anywhere for direct download again. So I'm not putting it anywhere for direct individual download this year. But this year being the 10-year anniversary of Spirit Blade Productions, and this song being an old and now somewhat lapsed Spirit Blade Productions tradition to put up every year at Christmas time, I'll put it up. I'm going to play it right now. This is what I'd call my quote-unquote classic mix of this song one last time before I tinker with it probably next year. Merry Christmas, guys. Have a fun, memorable New Year celebration, and I'll look forward to blabbing at you again on the other side. Bye for now.
God with us. 2,000 years ago, the cosmic ruler of the universe ripped through the fabric of space and time to reveal himself to humanity. And he'll come near to you today,
if you'll only ask him.
Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
You must remember this. Quark has a greasy kiss. Yes, this was Deep Space Nine's Casablanca episode, and it wasn't that bad. I mean, it wasn't the best episode at all, but at least this one contributed to the larger story. Quark's old love comes onto the station, and she has a couple students with her. She's a teacher. And we find out later that they are political dissidents. Cardassia is run... Oh, she's a Cardassian, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that. Cardassia is run by the military. Always has been for as long as we've known them in Star Trek. And they are basically starting to run this political dissident movement, which is trying to get civilians back in charge of it. And this actually will come up more and more often in Star Trek for now, in this civilian dissident movement. And this is the very early stages of it. And we will not see this woman again, but we'll see her movement again. And so it's basically Casablanca, which means there is a secret MacGuffin that they need to get away, in this case a cloaking device, and is all about there's a repressive government that's going to take control and surrender them over, and differing loyalties. We get to know some more about Garak, and we don't know his backstory, because he's a man of mystery, but we know now we learn that he has some sort of mysterious background where he can be relied upon to kill someone on command. And, you know, we find out he is disgraced, and at the end we find out he does truly love his country. He is a true patriot of Cardassia. Trying to think what else there is to this. The Cardassia romance stuff is not terrible, but it's not that great either. I've seen much better romances in Star Trek. But yeah, this is not a bad episode. This is a little more than, a little better than Shadowplay. And like I said, there is some level that comes back. It's almost all about Quark and Garak. So it's nice. This is one of those episodes that focuses on non-Federation people, even when the Federation should be deeply involved. Other than that, that's about it. So yeah, check this out if you want to learn more about the political backstories or Quark's backstory. But unfortunately, this will not be. This will not get a direct sequel. We'll not get any follow-up on this. But still, not a bad episode. Next time we get to a really good episode, Blood Oath. We're bringing on the Klingons.